off-season cast. Off-season, baby. It's here. It's what you waited for all this time. It's the off-season, but you know what? We're happy. POD cast.
No, we aren't.
Actually, shit. I should probably redo that. No. You know what? Off-season's for not trying. And I was originally going to redo that because I had forgotten my really good intro that I had thought about, but I'm just going to be adequate as I am, the adequate host, Chris Perfett, at Chris Perfett, P-E-R-F-E-T-T, on Twitter. And we're just going to sit here and just wallow in this, just like Michigan is wallowing in a massive beatdown.
What? Get out of here.
Yeah, that happened. That happened, Jeremy Reisman, fearless leader. Own it. Own it, Clemson, real.
Clemson got beat down. Michigan did not get beat down.
What was that then? What happened with Michigan? What would you call that?
I think meltdown would be more apt, but even that's, I mean, they lost. They lost a football game. Chill out. Who cares? It's a bowl game. Bowl games don't matter.
No, we're here for the shit talk. Especially since Ryan Matthews back is the motherfucking rock god is here, and he is green and white.
Green with envy.
Okay.
Provided without context. Hey, so I have a question for you, Chris, and I don't know if we should probably turn this into an actual segment. This is where we actually come to decide how we're going to, you know, whatever. I can't talk today. But New Year's resolutions, like, would you ever like resolve yourself to like try to be more than adequate, or is that just the resolution each and every year?
I think I'm just adequate. I mean, I'm at it. Okay. I can speak. I'm not going to let this infect me too. I think that I am adequate, not from a lack of trying. I've tried to be more than adequate. This just might be who I am. Like, what do you need me to do beyond being like adequate? What would not adequate, more than adequate look like in this scenario?
I don't even want to think about what that would look like because I just want you to be you. And if being you is being adequate, then that's who I want Chris to be each and every day of his life.
I do some preparation, but you know what? That kind of sucks.
Yeah, which is why I think we should make some Lions resolutions at some point during this podcast.
You know what?
Lions resolutions.
That is a great tease. Let's do that later in the show. We've got a lot to talk about here. We've got the coaching search to talk about. Big news, in case you haven't heard it, Jim Caldwell was fired.
What?
not sure if you've heard.
We're gonna keep running with the shtick until it dies out.
Yeah, Facebook Live watchers will realize that that's the second time he's pulled that stunt.
Facebook Live is getting perilously close to the orbit of the POD cast, and I'm trying to figure out how I can make this work for my end, too. Let's see. What else do we have here? NFL playoffs. I'm going to talk about that because I refuse to accept the season's over. And let's see here. On my rundown, conspicuously, I'm noticing any mention here of talking about a game that was played on Sunday. Did we play a game on Sunday?
Debatable.
I mean, it's only against probably like our biggest or second biggest, depending on who you ask, rival. It's kind of important, even if it's not playing for anything. You goddamn NFL fans. You can always call yourself better than college fans, but you won't respect a rivalry.
Yeah, but it's like you're facing a rival on its deathbed.
Who cares? We beat the Packers and we forced Ted Thompson into retirement.
We just put the final pillow over their asphyxiated faces.
Forced Ted Thompson into taking a reduced role and forcing the Packers to hire a new general manager. We did that. The Lions did that, I mean.
Like, I wish I would ever be at the point in my life where somebody could force me into, like, a quote-unquote working retirement. Like, now we know that Ted Thompson, like, is just going to be doing what? Basically nothing. Like, I would love to show up to Lions games and just get paid to show up there and not do a whole lot. Wait.
Just be like Herman Moore now, where he's just always there around doing something.
Which is probably the worst place for him to try to do nothing, considering how much work you got to do as a college coach. Anyway, speaking of coaches, We should probably, since we've talked enough about Lions Packers, apparently. Is there any other closing thoughts from this game before we move on to coaches? Like, come on, like.
Do you want to take a segment to talk about the game, Chris? I feel like you do. We can do half a segment.
We're 5 minutes in, so give me like a couple minutes because I loved Tate to Stafford, and I saw Baker Mayfield saw the same play I did because he tried running it against Georgia. He succeeded, but you know, RIP to Oklahoma. But still, Tate to Stafford's a thing now.
Yeah, and I think people. There was kind of two reactions to that, and I think every Lions fan had the exact same two reactions. One was, holy shit, this is awesome. And then immediately after, it's, holy shit, why didn't we run this play when it mattered?
Well, you know why we didn't run it while it mattered, Jeremy? Because it would have not worked, and you would have just whined about trickeration and flea flickers and all that other shit.
Right, yeah. Of course, like, if it's a fourth and one play, you run that play and it doesn't work. It's like, why stop getting so fancy? Just run it for a first down. I mean, hindsight is everything.
That's what I mean. That is a play where like you run it when it doesn't matter. Unless of course, again, you're in college and you're like Oklahoma or something. I don't know. But
that play so beautifully paralleled the Packers starting the game by doing an onside kick to get the ball at the beginning of the game after deferring to the second half. I felt like it was the Lions definitely like saying F you back. So it did matter at the end of the day.
It was a rivalry game.
Because it always matters to say F you to the Packers.
Yes, exactly. It's a rivalry game. That's the kind of shit you pull on a rivalry.
Plus, I also loved how Matthew Stafford just chuck the ball into like the third deck after he scored the touchdown.
You know what? That's good. Give it up to the people in the cheap seats. You know, all these people in the lower bowl, they're the ones getting the free t-shirts when the t-shirt cannons come out and shit, or they're throwing around the t-shirts or whatever. Give some to the kid who's, you know, his family maybe was scrimping on the tickets and only got him like, you know, end zone upper bowl nosebleeds. Stafford probably hit him square on.
Maybe the way he threw it, he may have killed a small child if it would have connected the wrong way.
I'm a little disappointed that these kind of like coaching squabbles, I mean, there weren't really coaching squabbles, but they were kind of like FUs to each other a little bit. I'm just upset it didn't result in a Dirk Cutter, like arm wrestling match at the center of the field after the game. Did you guys see that?
I saw that, and I was wondering who was going to be the one to finally, like, hand slap the other person's shoulder hard enough to, like, put them on their ass, and it never happened.
Who would win between Mike McCarthy and Jim Caldwell in that?
I can't even imagine a universe where Jim Caldwell would do that. Well, like, my imagination is so lacking.
I'm going with Bizarro World Caldwell to do it, but I think Caldwell would win because have you seen Mike McCarthy? That is a man who has been on the teat of Wisconsin cheddar for a very long time.
Are you saying he's a little top heavy?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like Caldwell lifts.
And I mean, Jim Caldwell handshakes literally everyone on the team before the game, so he probably has a pretty strong grip. I mean, he definitely knows the ins and outs of a solid handshake.
Yeah, you don't handshake your entire roster without knowing that you've got the clasp of death.
This is like, what happens when we try to talk about the game.
But I'm just saying, like, yeah, A, yes, this is what happens. B, I'm just saying, like, someone on your roster is going to try to test you on your handshake to make sure you're still the alpha dog. So you better be ready when someone comes for your throne. So I trust Jim Caldwell in this. Now we can talk about coaches. Is that what you want?
Talk about anything. We can talk about anything. I'm happy.
Right. Well, speaking of Jim,
I was willing to talk about the game a little bit. Talk about like Ezekiel Ansah making the Lions' decision tough this offseason with another two sacks. Sure.
Well, I mean, I think that's the point there too. This is kind of the last call for contract. What you might call it? Show offs. No. Auditions. Thank you. Yeah. God, my New Year's resolution is to get my vocabulary in order. Apparently, this is the last call for contract auditions with this game, and Ezekiel Ansah finally decided to wake up the echoes and had three sacks on Brett Hundley.
And in a way,
yep,
this entire game kind of, this entire game kind of felt like a send-off to a, not necessarily send-off, but like, I don't know, I guess a send-off in the way, obviously it was a send-off for Jim Caldwell. Ezekiel Ansah got that kind of curtain call of a game. And then a guy like Amir Abdullah, I think he was the one who scored the last touchdown in that. And, you know, he seemed pretty emotional after he scored, and it felt like kind of a pity carry that they gave him, since obviously his role is diminished quite a bit at the end. But I don't know. It was a nice, not exclamation point to the season, but a nice like ellipses, maybe a comma.
I'm not even going to try to place what kind of punctuation this game had, but I will ask you guys a question. Who had the second highest QBR in this game?
Golden Tate?
No. That was on an extra down.
You don't get QBR points for that?
You don't.
I'm going to guess it probably wasn't Brett Hundley. So I guess the question is, it's either who are the backups? I know one's Joe Callahan. Is it? It wasn't Joe Callahan.
Nope. Joe Callahan actually finished third in QBR. Randall Cobb was 1-for-1.
Randall Cobb
for 10 yards. He had a QBR of 49.4.
Randall Cobb. My God, that's a name I didn't think I'd hear again.
I think this is extremely fitting, considering how the first week of the season kicked off with Casey Redfern having the longest run of the day for the Lions.
Yeah, sure.
I think this, by the way, I think this game was a grave accent.
I don't know what that even is.
So that's the other symbol along with a tilde on your keyboard. I just learned this the other day.
All right.
This is what we get for talking about the game. Let's take a break. Are we done? Do we have anything else there to talk about?
But just in all seriousness, real quick, really cool for the Lions to finally sweep the Packers for the first time since I was born. No, not 2004, but I was actually born.
Maybe you should do it when you have Aaron Rodgers.
Okay, whatever. Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree, condescending fan. And then also the Lions' first back-to-back winning season since 94-95.
Has it really been that long? My God.
And it turns out if they would have lost this game, I think they would have ended up picking 16th instead of 20th. Who cares? That's not enough for me to care. I'm glad they won. I'm glad they created it.
This isn't the NBA draft. Like, there's a ton of positions out there that is going to make the draft choices a little more diverse, and it's still ultimately a crapshoot anyway.
It's the difference between getting Quentin Nelson and not getting Quentin Nelson. I'm going to be furious.
This is way too early to talk about draft stock, but let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk coaches. We've covered enough about this game. Ezekiel Ansah showing off, Randall Cobb having a better QBR than Brett, and Joe Callahan having better QBRs than Brett Hundley, sweeping the Packers, Tate to Stafford. Now we get to talk about the serious stuff we have to talk about, Caldwell and the future of the Detroit Lions. So we'll be right back. All right, PODcast in the new year, 2018. How are we feeling it right now?
Yeah, we didn't wish each other Happy New Year's. Happy New Year's, guys.
I'm not wishing you back.
All right. Screw you guys.
Happy New Year, listeners. I really don't care about you guys.
I'm listening to you, so you thanked me.
My God. This is just... Why are we doing this in 2018?
I don't know. We need to step it up. We need to bring something extra to the plate, something a little bit more. Like this tweet from Deion Sandcastle. His name is @InjectDank on Twitter. If Baker Mayfield is available at pick 20, the Lions should absolutely take him and have Stafford mentor him till it's time to pass the torch.
Kill me now.
How old does he think Stafford is? This isn't a Brett Favre situation where it's just like, oh yeah, he's just going to sit on the bench for a couple of years.
I don't know. I feel like once you get to 30, you're pretty old.
How dare you?
There's not going to be a podcast after this.
How's that for placating to my audience of listeners, Reisman, huh?
Sorry, huh? I couldn't hear you. I didn't have my hearing aid in.
That's right. You're going to go send an angry tweet?
What'd your Browns do? If I can
figure out how to use the Twitter.
Hey, leave my Browns alone. They have the first pick and the fourth pick, and they'll find a way to screw it up. You wait.
Both of them up.
Wait, I thought you were done with the Browns. You just referred to them as my Browns.
It's the offseason. They're back to being his Browns.
When you're as deep as I was, it's hard to get out.
We didn't even talk about that. The momentous joining of the 2017 Browns to the annals of history, along with the 2008 Lions.
True.
Do we talk? Okay, we talked enough about that. Let's talk about coaching.
All right.
Jim Caldwell's out. I think we did a proper dirge, I think, for Jim Caldwell on the last podcast, I believe. The last couple of podcasts, really.
True. I want to check in with you, Chris, because I think Ryan and I were kind of on the edge. We're like, we've accepted that it's probably going to happen. We're okay with it. But you went on a pretty hefty rant last week, kind of going against it. Where have you changed?
Well,
have you moved from that position at all?
Well, here's the thing. My rant wasn't even defending Caldwell. My rant was basically the idea is that I'm not out here to stand for Caldwell. What I am out here to rail against is basically organizational chaos, which is constant upheaval of your NFL team every 3 years, bringing in new coordinators, new coaches, new front office people, rather than trying to stick out a plan. I'm just saying, like, a guy like Bill Walsh implementing the West Coast offense and Joe Montana in San Francisco in the 90s would not be possible in today's NFL because no one has the goddamn patience anymore. I'm not saying Jim Caldwell was that, but you know what? That's been my rant for a long time, and I've got to stay true to my hits. Here's the other thing for me is that I don't want to sound hoity and say I have this above other fans, but once an organization puts something in place, then, I mean, that's that. I'm not here to demand a piece of control or to say that my opinions are what should be the course of that. I'm not going to come out here and say, except in any kind of irony or sarcasm or humor, that the Lions must hire Coach X. The Lions are going to do what the Lions are going to do. I'm just here to watch. So if they've gone and fired Jim Caldwell, then they fire Jim Caldwell. And I'm not going to rail against the past. So RIP to Jim Caldwell. RIP to your two watches memes. Ryan, that was your meme. So I invite you to come out here and sing the final song of Jim Caldwell.
It's sad, but it had to happen, I guess.
He's not going to get another job after this, is he?
If we really think about it, though, like the history of the podcast, that was the first thing I feel like a lot of people kind of gravitated towards and like sent us memes of Jim Caldwell wearing two watches.
The Wonder Woman.
It's true. Yes.
I think that honestly set us up for Africa, too. Getting people in the mood for memes.
Yeah.
He was a memeable coach.
It will hold a dear spot in my heart.
What are we going to do without all these Jim Caldwell reacts to X memes now?
I don't know. I got pretty sick of that one, like, 3x3 gridded picture. It's like, oh, this is Jim Caldwell happy. This is him sad. This is him angry. It's like,
okay. Yeah, that got worn out. That did get worn out. But every now and then there'd be like some image of Caldwell on the sideline that would make me happy again about either him reacting or not reacting.
I think the best gif outside of him trying to celebrate a couple times with his weird looking fist pumps and things like that was the Monday night game against the Seahawks that I was at. There was that one shot that's just like the blankest stare I've ever seen. And it's just slowly zooming in on him, almost like the, Hello Darkness, My Old Friend with Ben Affleck interview thing.
Yeah, yeah. I've got to say, my lasting memory of Caldwell is going to be, I went to a game in 2014. 2014 with my dad. It was to the Packers. It was on my birthday on September 21st. The Lions just kind of crushed the Packers. This is the game where I sat in front of Crackman, Ron Crackiola, and had to listen to him bitch the entire game, even though the Lions led wire to wire. But I will remember I got like a kind of a mini poster slash kind of oversized postcard of like Defend the Den, which was a slogan they were going with. And Jim Caldwell's on there along with the rest of like the big stars of Lions. But that's the only picture I've ever seen of Jim Caldwell without his hat. and his dome looks very shaped in a very, I had never seen Caldwell without a hat before. And I was like, wow, that's really what his head is shaped like. Okay.
Were the wires exposed?
No, they were not. Those were still well hidden.
Okay.
R.I.P. Papa Jim. I'll miss you.
Papa Jim's Pizza.
Maybe that's his next career move. Papa John's needs a new papa.
It does need a new papa.
Maybe we can just seamlessly transition Jim Caldwell into a new pizzeria role. Papa Jim's Pizza.
Better ingredients? Check the report.
All right, now we definitely need someone to get on Photoshop and make a Papa John, Papa Jim's Pizza.
Oh my God. No, seriously, like I mean Lions coaching's usually been a death knell. The only person who seems to have like ignored that curse seems to be Jim Schwartz, who for whatever dumb reason the NFL seems eager to give him another head coaching gig. But is this probably it for him, unless he gets like another offensive coordinator position. But I don't think like his time with the Ravens was a rousing success either.
I'd have to go back because I don't remember, but when he was head coach of the Colts, I'm not sure if like for almost every press conference, he was bringing his grandchildren up to the podium each and every time. So I truly feel like this might be it for Jim Caldwell as a coach.
Time to focus on the family.
I think so. He's a family man.
He's a papa.
He's a grandpapa.
He's a grandpapa. I don't know. I think he might still get a chance if he wants it. Because I mean, the reason he was brought to Detroit to fix Stafford, and he kind of did that. So in terms of his title of, you know, quarterback guru, I think that remains unblemished. And, you know, you look at Caldwell's resume in Detroit, and I think a lot of people will see, you know, 36-28 or whatever it was, say, wow, he did that in Detroit. That's not so bad.
A winning coach in Detroit. I know Lions fans aren't impressed by it, but for the rest of the national media, it's like, oh, wow, you have a winning record as a head coach for the Detroit Lions.
You know what? I've noticed that like a lot of externally on Twitter, people who are not part of Lions Twitter, not Lions fans, are commenting, why are the Lions firing a coach that's winning games? Like, why are they firing a coach that has them with a winning record each and every year? It's like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's still like the national perception of who the Lions are.
Right.
It hasn't changed.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I mean, until it's probably not going to change in any time soon. And that's kind of was always my fear, too, is like once the Lions get something good going, there could be this backslide. But as I said, this is the future now. And we've spent 10 minutes talking about Jim Caldwell and his watches. So let's talk about the early coaching search. As we are sitting here right now recording, Terrell Austin just finished his interview for the Lions head coaching gig. I don't think he's a front runner, but the coaching search is still early.
I'm with you. Yeah, let's talk about Terrell Austin for a second, and I don't want to get into any Rooney Rule talk because that's ridiculous. Steve Wilkes.
I totally trust professional football fans to talk about institutional racism in the NFL's coaching searches. I trust them to know what they're talking about. Absolutely trust them.
But yes, right. I mean, yeah, that's why we're not even going to bother to get into it. I don't think that's what's happening here. I don't think this is a Rooney Rule interview. I think it is the Lions doing due diligence, but at the same time, I'm with you, Chris. I don't think this is that serious of a job interview.
I just think,
I think
I just think his star has fallen so far from where it was in 2014 that it's giving it to him because, like, he's someone within your organization who has been talked about as being a head coach in other places. But, I mean, his stock has fallen so far, I don't think he's being considered that seriously.
But the one thing he does have going for him that I don't think any of these other candidates can, I mean, they can't claim, is that he already has a built-in rapport with the team, with the players. And by all means, it's a good one. And if the Lions are looking to not have that big of a transition in terms of that, specifically the relationship with the players, this is the easiest way to go. And you think about what you look for in a head coach. And a lot of times you're thinking, ooh, I want this, you know, this guy with brilliant schemes and stuff and you know, top of the line analytics and all that sort of things. But sometimes being a head coach is just about being a leader of men. And Terrell Austin has that built in with him already. And he's not going to coordinate the defense anymore. That's what your coordinators are for, is building in complex schemes and innovative plays. So on that end, it makes sense to at least interview the guy. But again, I just think that Bob Quinn probably wants his guy in there, and I highly doubt it's going to be Terrell Austin.
I think it's also really unlikely it's going to be Austin, just because if Quinn's going to make the move to get rid of Caldwell because he wants this team to, it seemed pretty clear from his press conference that he wants this team to win championships, not just end up 9-7. How can you promote somebody from within who is a part of that 9-7 culture?
Hold up, but everyone wants to win championships, Ryan.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, I'm saying that Bob Quinn's message won't match up with his actions if he ends up hiring Terrell Austin.
I feel like Terrell Austin is like, you do that just in case you swing and miss on a few things. Like, I think Quinn has had his mind on Matt Patricia for a few years now, but I guess it's ultimately going to be like, how much have you talked to Matt Patricia? How much is probably like you're going to get him or whatever? And I mean, someone can still lob him a better offer. So just keep Terrell Austin around just in case something falls through.
I think that's fair. Let's move on to Matt Patricia though, because obviously that's the biggest name that has come out from the beginning of the search, even before Caldwell was even fired.
Literally once Bob Quinn came to town.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, yeah, when he first came in, they would talk about potentially switching coaches, and Matt Patricia was at the top of the list. And then when the reports started filling in before Sunday's game, it was like, well, look out for Matt Patricia. He could be the leading candidate. And it's now official that they expressed interest, or there are actual reports of it. No scheduled interview, but if they are going to interview him, it's going to have to happen this week, or they're going to probably have to wait until the Super Bowl, after the Super Bowl, because since the Patriots are in the playoffs, they can only interview him either during a bye week or until they're out of the playoffs, essentially. So if they're going to interview Matt Patricia, it's probably going to happen this week. And I don't know. I had very mixed feelings early on in this process about Matt Patricia. At this point, he's actually probably my favorite candidate of the six that they've expressed interest in, though.
Can I just say something? Well, here's the thing, and this is why I'm kind of leery about a lot of these coordinators, especially the younger coordinators, because you talk about being leader of men and everything here, Jeremy, about what you want out of your head coach, that you're not handling schemes anymore. But that's all Matt Patricia's done, is just handle schemes. Like, I'm just looking through his resume here. He was a grad assistant at Rensselaer in 96, then a defensive line coach at Amherst, Syracuse, and a grad assistant. Then with the Patriots since 04, where he was an assistant, linebackers coach, safety coach, defensive coordinator. This is a guy who just, like, yeah, he focuses on individual performance and schemes. And that's all he's really done. And he's, like, I mean, I shouldn't be calling 43 that young, but he's 43. That's baby years for a lot of these NFL coaches out there. So I'm just saying, like where in here is that what you were saying there about Terrell Austin, about the idea of just sometimes a head coach needs to just be a leader of men? Where do you see that here with Matt Patricia?
Well, I mean, when you're a coach of a unit, you definitely have a very interpersonal relationship with all the people on that list. And I mean, you look at some of the reports about Matt Patricia. Obviously, we've pimped out the Sports Illustrated article time and time again. And if you haven't read it yet, please do, because it's a very interesting look at how he came to be essentially Bill Belichick's right-hand man, and how he's gained trust not only with the coaching staff, but with the players. You know, he was a coach of the linebackers when they had some of the best linebackers in the league, and they kind of laughed at him in the film room. But by the end of the year, by the end of his tenure as the linebackers coach alone, he'd gained their respect. There's also an interesting article by, I think it's WEEI.com, where it talks about his personal relationships with guys. I'm trying to remember the specific player who retired.
That first story sounds like way too manicured for me to really accept.
I mean, they are puff pieces. I'm not going to lie.
That sounds like a Vince Lombardi origin story type thing, right? Like, so I'm resistant to that. But I totally get it. I totally get why he's at the top. I just think that, you know, with all due respect to our own Mike Payton, I don't think the Lions are the most attractive job out there for a head coach, and everyone's going to be trying to get Matt Patricia.
See, I don't agree with. And there's a couple criticisms that I don't necessarily agree with Matt Patricia. He is a highly sought after coach. I will say that the Giants and the Cardinals have already reached out as well. But I mean, wouldn't you think that he'd want to join his buddy Bob Quinn a little bit? Don't you think that has at least a little bit pull to be with someone he knows what their mind is like? He knows that they'd fall in line, that sort of thing.
I don't know, because I'm trying to wager this, because you mentioned the Giants in there and everyone's going to suddenly pimp out New York. Not only that, but also having your own, like, you know, your own quarterback coming in there. Ryan, what do you think here?
What do I think about what?
All right, starting off 2018 strong, everybody.
I've warmed up to the idea of Matt Patricia. I really have. But I kind of want to see it in a specific way. I want to see Jim Bob Cooter back. I think that if Patricia comes in, I know that Bob Quinn in his press conference said that he was going to give full autonomy to his coach to pick his coordinators. But just for the sake of me being super intrigued by this idea, I talked about it yesterday on the Facebook Live, but I want to see what Jim Bob Cooter can do without Jim Caldwell, because I truly think that the lack of a running game, it's followed Jim Caldwell throughout his entire career. I want to see if Jim Bob Cooter can do anything different with somebody else as a head coach. So if Patricia comes, I would really like to see the continuity stick with JBC and Stafford, because I think they've developed such a really good relationship. I would hate to see that come to an end. And I guess it doesn't mean a whole lot, but we can get into this talking about the next head coaching candidate. But Pat Shurmur, he's the only guy on offense so far that the Lions have reached out to.
I was about to bring this up. There are, of the six we're talking about, we have four that they are originally interviewing. We got to take a break here soon, but four are defensive coordinators. One's an assistant head coach, linebackers coach, Winston Moss from the Packers, and then Pat Shurmur. And interesting enough, missing here from all this was someone else from the Patriots I thought would be probably in consideration across the league, Josh McDaniel.
Right.
So well, I find that interesting.
I want to go back to the idea of keeping Jim Bob Cooter real quick, because I still haven't warmed up to it, but it's tricky, right? Because we don't know who was responsible for what, right? Like, who was responsible for Stafford getting better? Was it Caldwell? Was it Jim Bob Cooter? I mean, responsible? What?
I was going to say, we saw how bad the offense was with Lombardi for a little bit.
Yeah, but
yeah, or, yeah time, it could just yeah, be the absence of Lombardi.
At the same time, Stafford toned down on the mistakes, right? Like, he had definitely, we'd seen a change in his game style play before Jim Bob Cooter took over.
And more to that too, like, the offense definitely regressed a bit here in 2017.
And who are we taking to blame for the horrible run game? Is it Jim Bob Cooter? Is it Ron Prince, who also got fired? Is it Jim Caldwell? It's like, it's weird how we delegate certain successes and failures to certain guys when we don't really know who did what. So
right, it almost felt like, honest,
be like Jim Bob Cooter was awesome because he fixed Stafford, and it was Ron Prince's fault that the running game sucked. That
or,
seems
or it was bad. Yeah, it always felt like Jim Caldwell became the goat for a lot of the sins, but then Jim, every time you had a broadcast, it was Jim Bob Cooter is the amazing guru who's, you know, fix Stafford and everything. And it's just not that clear. But we've gone 20 minutes on this. We need to take a break. We're going to have to make this podcast pretty long. We don't have much in the mailbag. We'll rejigger what we've got left, but we've got to talk some more coaches. So give us a break. We'll be right back. PODcast. All right, more coaching talk. We've gotten through one here, so we're going to have to go a little faster here. We got through Matt Patricia. Let's talk about and Terrell Austin. Technically, too. Let's talk about the rest. Let's start with Pat Shurmur, since we brought him up last time. Ryan, did you want to take this one on the nose, since I think you were talking about him?
Sure. I mean, I'm definitely intrigued by the idea of Pat Shurmur becoming head coach. I think that what he's been able to do with the Vikings is nothing short of, I mean, it's nothing short of a miracle. I mean, if you look at the talent they have on paper, if you look at the names that they have, and then consider the offensive output that they've had so far this season, it's incredible. I mean, Case Keenum is your starting quarterback after Sam Bradford, you know, breaks himself. Dalvin Cook goes down with an ACL injury, but the run offense just continues to hum right along. They've done a good job of not turning over the ball. They've put the defense into a good position to make sure that they don't lose them games. Now things would obviously have to be a little bit different here in Detroit, but I'm at least intrigued about the idea of Pat Shurmur. And I know he's getting a lot of consideration amongst other teams as well, including the Arizona Cardinals, the Chicago Bears. So, I mean, Jeremy, what do you think about the prospect of a guy like Pat Shurmur coming in, a Michigan native?
There you go.
And for Ryan here, a former Cleveland Browns head coach,
and he didn't do such a bad job.
He drafted Colt McCoy.
Yeah,
he's probably the best Browns coach. I mean, Browns quarterback they've had in more than a few years now was Colt McCoy.
Colt McCoy and Brandon Whedon were the two guys he had to try to turn into something, and didn't quite do what he's doing with the Vikings then. It's interesting. This is an interesting hire. I mean, if you want to think about it like this, it also has the benefit of weakening a division opponent. That certainly should factor at least somewhat into it. Interesting also that he's one of the first three coaches to have a scheduled interview with the Lions. He's interviewing with the Lions on Thursday. He's also interviewing with the Cardinals on Thursday, reportedly after the Lions job. But yeah, I don't know what I think about this one. This is not necessarily a head scratcher, but one I hadn't really thought about going into this. I love what they're doing in Minnesota. I mean, we've joked all year that I've been such a huge fan of what's going on in Minnesota. And I do think they're building their team right, you know, with a team that kind of relies heavily on the run game. But I mean, he also made, you know, chicken scratch out of essentially two wide receivers that were completely off everyone's radar this offseason. You know, Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen weren't exactly thought of as the best 1-2 combination in the league. And they absolutely played like it this year. So I'm highly impressed with what he's done. I'm kind of leaning towards a defensive coach though.
All right. Well, let's go back and talking about another division rival you could potentially weaken. Packers assistant head coach, linebacker coach, Winston Moss. I don't know much about him. When I hear assistant head coach, I'm just wondering what that means. Considering Mike McCarthy's girth seems to take up quite a bit, but that's enough about joking about Mike McCarthy. What do you guys think about
I was going to jump into Quentin Moss talk.
Yeah, go on and talk about Quentin Moss.
Winston Moss. Why do we say Quentin Moss?
I don't know.
This is already off to a bad start. Winston Moss, obviously, is probably the biggest head scratcher to me. It kind of came out of nowhere. Not a coordinator. Has I mean, you know, never really been a coordinator anywhere. He's always been a position coach, and he's always been a linebacker coach. I know in Green Bay, he's the current assistant head coach slash linebackers coach. But the one interesting tidbit that I dug up from Wikipedia was that after the Packers had a really abysmal season in 2008, where they finished 6-10, McCarthy cleaned house of everybody on the defense except for Winston Moss. So that,
and they're doing that again.
Huh?
And they're doing that again. That just happened. Dom Capers is out as a defensive coordinator. They fired their defensive line coach. They fired their assistant linebackers coach, but guess who stayed?
You want to talk also being a player's coach too. Like, this guy played 10 years in the NFL. Like, he was a rather, like, I wouldn't say he was like all-star or anything, but like, he's a Super Bowl champion, and I know that doesn't really matter for much or whatever, but I'm just saying, like, you've got a guy who a lot of these coaches usually drum out after like a year or so. This guy's played for quite a bit of time. Maybe that might be part of it. I don't know. I think it's interesting just because, yeah, as you say, there's the longevity to him in Green Bay, and he's clearly potentially being groomed for something. And also, didn't the Lions originally take a crack at some other pieces? Like, before they got Bob Quinn, I think they were also trying to take a crack at someone else from the...
Elliot Wolf, yeah.
Elliot Wolf, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know. This is also a name that I quickly warmed up to. And I know a lot of people are like, ooh, a guy from the Packers defense? Packers defense is horrible. That's terrible. I would never want someone like that. But with the assistant head coaching title, I think it speaks to his leadership and the respect that he commands from his players. And then you think about the Green Bay linebackers and the history they've had at that position. It's definitely been the strength of that defense for a decade or so. You know, we're talking Nick Perry, Clay Matthews, Blake Martinez had a Pro Bowl-ish season, although he didn't make the Pro Bowl. In terms of, and then you think about the Lions roster, who do they need on defense to make the biggest step next year?
Also want to say this, I'm going through like the archives of the pictures. You want to put him in consideration against Matt Patricia. He can grow a glorious beard too.
I'm wondering what it says about him, though, that he was the linebacker coach for a decade at Green Bay before he made the jump to assistant head coach just this past season. Like, I'm wondering why.
Well, no, that's not completely true. I believe he was promoted in 2007 to assistant head coach.
No, just like the last year or so. But I think that was more like. But still, like, I imagine when you're talking about Packers, you're talking about longevity at positions. And, you know, once you finally get some instability and finally someone notices, oh, hey, Mike McCarthy's not doing so great of a job. Let's put someone in here to help him. What about this? What about, and you point to Winston Moss versus anyone else. I think that's a plus. All right, we got two more names on here, and I still want to do resolutions before we get into the mailbag, so let's try to get through these. Panthers defensive coordinator Steve Wilks, Texans defensive coordinator Mike Vrabel. I don't know if I'm saying that's right. Which you guys wanted to crack at first?
Let's talk Vrabel, since we're sticking with linebackers coaches and former linebackers. He's a guy, again, he has the added benefit of being able to coach up some linebackers, which Lions have a couple young ones. But I don't know, this is a guy that I feel like a lot of Lions fans are really excited about, but I don't quite see it yet. He's a guy that's still fairly new to coaching. I believe he was only promoted to defensive coordinator this year, 2017. And the Texans defense wasn't all that good. And granted, you got injuries he had to deal with, but I don't know.
Lost players. I mean, he lost AJ Bouye. I mean, yeah. JJ Watt goes out for the entire season.
Sure.
They had a rookie linebacker in Zach Cunningham, who played exceptionally well this year, I think, all things considered.
Yeah.
Well, got done praising Winston Moss for his playing career. Now I just looked up Vrabel's, and like, God, I forgot he was still, he was playing back in 2010. That was his last year in the league.
And he has familiarity with Bob Quinn then, right? Because he was with the Patriots.
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah, that's right. That's that Patriot way. That's that Patriot connection there.
He's also, the Colts are also seeking him out. They've sought an interview with him. So, you know, he is a sought after guy. Just for whatever reason, he's not high on my list right now.
And then finally,
I was going to say real quick, I would just rank him right underneath Matt Patricia for me, actually, right now. I think one would be Patricia, two would be Vrabel, three would probably be Pat Shurmur, and then fourth would be this guy that Chris is about to introduce.
Steve Wilks?
Yeah, I'm intrigued by it. I think that what he would bring to the table is that, like Terrell Austin, who came here from being a defensive backs coach in Baltimore, Steve Wilks has the same kind of background with the Carolina Panthers. So if there's one thing that we know that's a real strength of this team right now, it's the pieces that they have in the secondary. I mean, you have one of the top, I'm going to say one of the top three cornerbacks in football in Darius Slay. You have some other nice young pieces that you can move around with Jamal Agnew and Quandre Diggs and whatnot. So it's kind of like the bizarro Vrabel situation. Like if you want somebody to come in to like coach up there, or, you know, bizarro like Winston Moss situation where you want somebody to come in and coach up the linebackers. Well, imagine what a head coach who, you know, has a background in defensive backs, what he could unleash, I guess, from that standpoint.
He's a candidate that I don't, it's so weird because his coaching career has been so long and, you know, been with so many different teams, but in the NFL, this was his first year as a coordinator. And, you know, his NFL coaching career goes back to 2005, but before that, a ton of college experience. It's weird to me just that it's taken him so long to climb the ladder. And I guess that's a little bit worrisome, but at the same time, like, you've got a bunch of good coaches there in Carolina that he's had to jump. And, you know, Sean McDermott just left for the Bills last year, and that's kind of why he got promoted. But I don't know. It's hard to argue against the results he's produced and at least is partially responsible for in Carolina. But again, this is kind of low on my radar too.
I think that's it for coaches. Those are the six that we have right now. Is there any names on here that we did that weren't on here that you'd like to see the Lions potentially interview?
Well, you mentioned one name earlier, but I'm still kind of surprised that there's no Josh McDaniels on the list. So
I think I don't know what to make of Josh McDaniels. I know a couple teams are probably looking at him. I'm sure he's probably going to get an interview with Chicago, but I'm not feeling Josh McDaniels. I don't know. Maybe I just can't get that Broncos tenure out of my mouth.
There's one guy that I think out there that I think he's only been contacted by the Colts, and that's Seahawks defensive coordinator Chris Richard, who was, again, a secondary coach, so he has that same kind of built-in benefit that we were just talking about. I mean, this is essentially the guy who was the orchestrator of the Legion of Boom. He came in right before Richard Sherman joined the team, was drafted, and built one of the most feared secondaries in the history of the NFL. And I don't understand why he's not getting more looks. I don't know if it's a personality thing. I don't know much about him as a man, but I mean, how can you argue the secondary coach from the Seattle Seahawks for the past 6-7 years?
Can I just say, like, I find it fascinating that all we're talking about is coordinators. Like, and this is kind of my problem with the NFL is that the pool is becoming far more about what can you do with a given system. Like, I think, and I know I'm trying to write something about this. I've talked about it off air with Jeremy. And I think the Lions should, although I don't think they will, but they should be looking at a college coach too. I know it's not the sexiest thing out there. I know people are going to point to the track records because some teams just don't know how to fucking hire someone from the college ranks. But I really do think that like someone like David Shaw could possibly be someone you might want to consider. Or maybe like a Chris Peterson from the Pac-12. I like a lot considering Pac-12 coaches because they tend to be more scheme-based than anything versus, in a lot of other places where you end up relying much more on like the strength of your recruiting. And I'm just saying, David Shaw, like, Stanford's not an easy place to coach, even after Jim Harbaugh. And like, this guy just won coach of the Dodd Trophy for coach of the year down there, and generally plays a pretty hardcore smash mouth form of football that, I mean, it could be interesting for the Lions. I'm just saying, don't close off college completely and keep running around the NFL ranks. I think there are some college coaches that are of interest. I don't know what you guys think.
I don't have anyone in particular in mind, but I'm certainly not against it. One thing I will give college coaches is that, you know, innovation is kind of born out of necessity with a lot of teams that don't have a good talent pool. And that's attractive to me. I think football can get kind of monotonous and boring in the NFL. And I think sometimes it takes a creative mind from one of the lower leagues to really change things.
Well, I mean, just in general, too, what you're saying there, you know, creativity born out of necessity. I mean, the Lions, no matter what they do right now, are still kind of fighting to be a bigger fish in a pool of already very big fish. If they want to go places, it might just have to be that they just have to break the system a little bit to get where they want to go.
I agree.
So, I mean, there's plenty of coaches out there. I'm going to try to round out about five names here and get that out soon. But I would say, like, David Shaw definitely intrigues me. I don't know too much about Chris Peterson. I've seen his name getting thrown around a lot. But those are two guys I'd like to see the Lions go for. But it doesn't look like Bob Quinn's going to really interview anyone from – I mean, he says, yeah, sure, to the college things, but I'd like to – I don't think it's going to go that way, but I think it should. Surprise yourself. All right, let's do resolutions next segment, and then we'll see what we've got in the mailbag and for reviews. So stick around. We'll be right back. Resolution time. No mailbag. No, actually, we do have a mailbag coming up. But first, instead of reviews or mailbag, we always start with the Blues Clues theme. But instead, we are going to talk resolutions. And Ryan's resolution is apparently spend less time with the POD cast because he had to bounce during the break. So it's me, Jeremy, the fearless leader, and bringing in editor extraordinaire, jet setting editor, Kyle Yost.
Hello, world.
Welcome back, buddy. It's been a while.
It's been too long. Maybe that's my resolution to come back.
I mean, if it's going to get us more fruit salad takes.
Yeah, I hope you guys all enjoyed your holiday of choice with a big bowl of fruit salad. I know I did.
That's an old joke. You have to go back about more than a year to find that POD cast joke. But I do enjoy the fruit salad, and I can actually rib someone about the Michigan loss now, because apparently Jeremy is impervious. Although we talked about this on Twitter.
Yeah, I might not be coming back if that's what this is about.
No, it's not. We're here to talk resolutions. We're here to talk questions. So what, Jeremy, you were the one who wanted to do like Lions resolutions. What are you thinking?
Was I? Well, okay.
Or was that Ryan, and then he just bounced on the segment he tried creating?
I think it was.
This is great.
But, all right, let's do resolutions for the team, and then if you want to do a personal resolution for either the POD cast or Pride of Detroit or whatever you want. But the number one resolution period has to just be get a freaking pass rush, please. Please.
Whoa, what are you doing? No, the resolution is get a run game established.
Nope, that's yours. Mine is get a pass rush. Establish the pass rush. That's the new establish of 2018. Establish the pass rush.
I'm team establish the pass rush. It's not going to catch on. It's like the people who said we should replace Toto Africa after that one year.
No.
We got to have a new song. You were the one who said, like, hey, should we maybe move on to a different song than Africa in 2017? I was like, no. And you know what? Here you are trying to move on from Lions must establish the run game. And you know what? It's going to get shot down too.
We'll see. I hope it's not shot down by Bob Quinn, though, because as nice as it was to see Ezekiel Ansah finally look like himself in the past two games, we need more than that. I don't want anyone who essentially played a snap this season outside of Ansa to be starting.
That's a cruel thing to say to Anthony Zettel.
I'm sorry, buddy. Stick to tackling trees.
Kyle, do you have any resolutions for the Lions?
Well, if I was the new head coach, or maybe a resolution for the new head coach, is just to stop shooting yourself in the foot. You know, how many times have we sat and criticized a weird decision late in a game or untimely penalties that seem like they can be avoided? And I'm hoping that, you know, even as the roster continues to develop and gets into shape and in a few of those areas like we were talking about, that we can just, you know, maybe avoid being our own worst enemy for a little bit. You know, if I'm the coach, that's one of the first things I'd want to tackle with this team. Just stop getting in its own way.
Field, you know, 11 what? Players.
You know what? Now that I'm sitting here thinking, I've got to say, Kyle, I was talking about college coaches that could potentially go for the Lions job. I didn't bring up Jim Harbaugh.
Mm. Yeah, maybe him and D'Antonio could be a good duo.
Combine their powers.
It's like the worst kind of like apartment sitcom from the 80s. Just revive that.
Yeah, that's scary. But at this point, maybe this team needs just to try something new. You know, innovation. It's a copycat league. All that. You know, be the first team with two head coaches. It could work.
Oh, I
like,
thought
it's like Two and a Half Men.
Does Harbaugh count for one and a half?
No, the half would be like the kids. So I guess in this case, the half man would be Matt Stafford.
Hmm. Let's try
make this work. Yeah, exactly. All right, let me play the mailbag theme. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I forgot completely. What do we have resolutions for this POD cast other than trying to be more than adequate?
I think get established the pass rush going is going to be mine.
Oh, for the love of God.
You know, maybe we can move on from wrestling in 2018.
Do we? Oh, there we go. About
that? Yeah, good.
I'd like to get segment shorter. I'd like to get in more topics. I'd like to cut down the rambling, and I would like to get us more focused. And that requires preparation. And that, much like with me losing weight in the new year, is probably why it's going to fail.
Yeah, your answer was way more serious than ours.
Yeah, because this is my baby.
Okay.
Anyway, give me that Blues Clues music.
Mail time.
Mail's here.
Here's the mail. It never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When it comes, I want to wail.
Mail time. Hashtag AskPOD as always. And we actually have quite a bit of a backlog because we had... Actually, that's right. We had kind of our impromptu mailbag, but I'm seeing what we have left over from that we didn't get to. We got some from the day of the game, and we've got some from today as Jeremy sends out the GIF of Predator. We have no new reviews, but you know what? We're doing all right in the iTunes rankings now, except for the fact that Tory Petri and the Detroit Lions have suddenly barraged us this year with like 5 different podcasts.
Don't tell the people that. They don't need to know that.
You'll stick with us.
Bleep it out.
You're listening this late. You're listening an hour into this podcast. You're sticking with us. All right, let's get to the questions. And already there's a lot of draft questions in here, which is going to boil the blood for a while. It's a new year, but we're trying to be patient. Anyway, I want to take this question from Mike Addy from, I don't know, from the day of the game. Should the Lions' next coach bring in a wildcat offense with Showtime Tate taking snaps with Stafford and Abdullah lined up in the split back?
If Stafford is going to be one of the offensive weapons that's not a quarterback, I prefer it like Sunday where there's not a defender within 20 yards of him.
That's true, because he will get hit really hard.
You know, a different spin on this, but I kind of liked how they were using Agnew a little bit towards the end of the year on just a few plays. And, you know, you can call them gimmicky or a small wrinkle, but I kind of like that. You know, if we're thinking to go that direction, just be a little more creative in a normally bland offense, I could see that, you know, being something to explore, but obviously nothing too crazy here.
Okay, Evan at Big Slick McDick, friend of the show, trying really hard to think of a good question about something that won't be discussed on the show unprompted. Who should coach the Detroit Lions? Actually, we haven't actually said who should. We just talked about the candidates.
Well, I did say my favorite, and it's surprising because a week ago I wouldn't have said it was my favorite. I think Matt Patricia is my favorite right now, and I kind of set up a poll today asking all the Lions fans who their favorite of the six guys that have been mentioned is, and surprisingly, Matt Patricia, 59% of the vote after, I think when I asked first if fans would approve of Matt Patricia being the head coach, only 61% said yes. So now when given six, you know, five other options, still 59 say give me Patricia, which I find pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think that just speaks to kind of the quality of the candidates out there, or at least who has been linked with the team so far. You know, nothing against any of the names, but there's really not a slam dunk that we've seen so far, somebody that really gets you excited. And so, you know, Patricia has his faults, but they're no greater than any of the faults of any of the other candidates. So I wouldn't be upset if he was a guy ultimately that ends up with the job.
I mean, we're talking about who we want, who I want, not anyone that's been mentioned. Give me Mike Leach and his weird coffee cooling habits and his pirate tactics and everything. But give me Mike Leach.
You could have him.
Okay. John Whitaker asks us, what happens first, Lions 100-yard rusher or Browns winning a game? Oh, gee, wow. Ryan had to duck out of this one, huh?
Kyle, I'm going to make you answer this one first.
You know, let's go give me 100-yard rusher. I'm feeling good about this team. I'm feeling like it's going to be a real priority this offseason, and I watched the Browns for a couple of the last games this season, and it was not pretty. It did not look
okay,
good.
Okay, I want to ask this because the Toledo radio guys keep asking me about this, and we keep talking about comparing now the 2017 Browns 0-16 to the 2008 Detroit Lions 0-16. And I mean, I guess my difference is that I look at this and I saw, okay, yeah, sure, the 08 Lions were awful, but they at least had a plan to get out of it. I don't know where that plan comes from for the Browns. And you're now talking about like what, 1-31 in the past two seasons. I'm sure the record looks even worse if we start extrapolating this out. But like, I don't know where, do you guys see, just as an NFL fan, like where do you see this exit ramp coming for the Browns, or even have any, like, how is this even different from them and like the 08 Lions?
Well, I actually think the 08 Lions had a worse team. If you go by DVOA alone, it's not even close. The Lions were
really?
Much more.
Huh. Yeah. I would have thought it was the other way around, because I've been saying on the record all the time that I think these Browns are worse than the 08 Lions.
I mean, it's hard to say. I'd like to go in, and I think I might write a story like this, even though it's kind of played out at this point. Just like looking at point differential, stuff like that, I'm not sure where it stands, but... You said the Lions had an exit plan, and the exit plan was what, Matthew Stafford the next year, first overall? Well,
yeah, but even before that, they had gotten other pieces there too. Because they, I mean, in 08, they had Calvin Johnson on the roster.
That's true. But they have, you know, what's his name? Just came back from suspension. He's pretty good. Josh Gordon.
Yeah.
And I mean, they have the first and what, fifth pick this year? That's a great way to get out of a hole real quick. I mean, the Lions went 2-14 the next season, so don't expect anything crazy out of the Browns, but they have a pretty good defense. Their offense is an absolute goddamn mess, but I think they'll turn it around. No, I shouldn't say that. I don't think they're going to turn it around very quick, but I think they have just as much of a building block as the Lions did in 2008. Maybe I would say that even more of a building block, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's really going to come down to drafting. I think that second pick is actually the number four overall pick. So they'll have basically whoever they want in this draft. And then they have like a boatload of second round picks too, I think. So
right.
If they can draft well, it's going to take a little bit of time, but they could start, you know, acquiring some of the players that they need to make a turnaround. You know, I don't think we're going to see anything for a few years now, but I would be surprised if they can't pick up at least a few wins.
What do you guys make? What do you guys make of the Browns kind of joining the ranks of like the Baltimore Colts and the San Diego Chargers, in that you have quarterbacks coming out of college who are saying, yeah, I really don't want to play for them. Like I would basically like not play for them if they drafted me.
I want to see the Browns call their bluff, to be honest, because I don't think that's true.
Well, I just don't they have much. I don't think the quarterbacks have much power. I mean, I think they can say it, but I think ultimately, I don't think they can pull an Eli Manning type move here.
Yeah, that's who we're talking about. We're talking about like Eli Manning and John Elway. And Elway was like threatening to basically go play baseball. And he had a deal from the Yankees too. So like he had that lined up.
Yeah, the only move that they really have is guys with another year of eligibility can stay back in college. But I mean, that's not to say that the Browns will be near the top of the draft board again next year.
That's true. It's kind of an eternally lurking shark here. Yeah. We've got another. Go on.
I was just going to answer the original question real quick. And I think the Browns are going to win a game first, because I've become conditioned now. I'm never going to predict the Lions to have a good running game until it actually happens. Why would I?
This is the year, Jeremy. It's going to happen.
Who is it going to be, Kyle? Is it going to be Nick Chubb? Who's gonna have the 100 yards?
It's going to be whoever that second round pick is.
All right. We got another what happens first question here from Ryan Collins. Who wins the Super Bowl first? Patrick Mahomes, Arm God Matt Stafford, or John Gruden? So in a move that the Raiders made to try to completely upend Herm Edwards, the worst coaching hire of 2017, the Raiders kicked out Jack Del Rio for no goddamn reason, just so they could get John Gruden.
Not official yet, but yeah.
The Davis clan is so fucking smart. It's not official, but guess what? An ESPN employee is reporting another ESPN employee. It's like, hey, will John Gruden be the next head coach of the Oakland, soon to be Vegas Raiders? I don't know. Go down the hall and ask him.
Yeah, that's a strange one. I mean, I think this question, so, you know, Gruden is really Carr in this situation, which we talked a lot about Carr versus Stafford earlier. You know, before the season began even. And it's crazy to say, but I think the answer is Stafford here, right?
I think so. I'm glad that Ryan isn't here, because he's a big Patty Mahomes guy and he probably would take him in this situation.
Well, but guess what? I'm here and I'm a big Patty Mahomes guy.
Oh no.
And I'm taking him.
Ooh.
I think the Chiefs are set up well. I like Andy Reid as a coach.
How many years does Alex Smith have left? Is this his last one?
Hard to tell. That guy just kind of hangs on. I mean, even if Alex Smith like wins the Super Bowl, like technically Patty Mahomes gets a ring. So,
I mean, I'm looking here. Alex Smith is signed through next year, but they could release him and save a whole bunch of money.
Yeah.
So Chris, is that you're predicting that's what's going to happen? Alex Smith is going to leave.
I mean, I'm basically betting on the Chiefs here, and I think they've got a good chance as anyone to come out of a pretty weak AFC this year.
Well, they have a better chance than the Lions to win the Super Bowl this year, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that is objectively true.
There's a chance Patrick Mahomes wins a playoff game this year. Who knows what happens? Maybe Alex Smith gets injured.
Crazier things have happened.
Okay, I'm digging through. The rest of the questions we have are, you guessed it, free agency talk, draft talk. Do you guys want me to take just one of them or what?
I feel like if we take one, it's going to invite more next time. But if it's all we got, let's do it. I mean,
well, we've got that. RC, thank you, RC, for sending us in some questions about what's in store for POD in 2018. I think we hit it with our resolutions and just in general for in store for POD. More good shit.
More good shit.
Yeah.
The one thing that I teased before is potentially a 3-man Facebook Live. We'll see.
Yep. I mean, we're gonna rip our slogan from AMPM, which I learned is a thing out here when I came out to California. Too much good stuff. There's gonna be too much good stuff at POD in 2018. Tomges. See, no one's gonna get that, and Jeremy doesn't watch television out here.
I know AMPM.
You do know AMPM. Cool. Okay. Cool. Let's see. I'm gonna take one from Josh LaFon. I know you don't want to do this, but he gives us some defined names: Mo Hurst, Michigan defensive tackle; Vita Vey, Washington defensive tackle; Roquan Smith, Georgia linebacker; Marcus Davenport, UT San Antonio defensive end, are all available at 20. Who do you pick?
Kyle, how are you on your college knowledge? It's probably a little bit better than mine.
You know, I'm not really
watched Mo Hurst.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big draft guy. I think if the Lions ended up with Hurst, that would be, I don't think that fans would be disappointed.
That would be a tackle. We don't need a tackle right now. We need an edge rush.
I think we need everything. I mean, I wouldn't go linebacker in the first round. I think you got to address the line, but again, a lot of it's going to depend on the new coach and scheme. But no, I think Hurst has a place on this team, and I think that he's the type of talent that could make a difference. But I'm no draft expert or anything like that, so I couldn't tell you, what's the best value at 20.
Here's the only two guys I'm familiar on this list so far is Vita Vey and Mo Hurst. And I watched Washington's bowl game, and I focused a lot on Vita Vey because Lions Twitter has just been buzzing about this guy. And honestly, I came out a little underwhelmed, and admittedly, I haven't watched the rest of his tape, but he was very slow off the snap, and he's a huge guy. I guess I expected him to be a little bit more nimble, a little bit more of a three-tech guy. I don't know if I really saw it out of him in this game, whereas Mo Hurst has been terrorizing quarterbacks and running backs alike in the backfield pretty much all season. And I know Vita Vey has been doing the same, and he made some big plays in the bowl game too. But just in terms of what I've seen personally, I like Mo Hurst a little bit better, and maybe that's me being a homer, but give me Mo Hurst.
See, the one on here I'm familiar with, and this is probably talking about my own habits of watching football, I know a lot more about Roquan Smith than anyone else on here. But as you mentioned, like, if the Lions are taking another linebacker at 20, we've got problems.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that the linebacking core can always use improvements, but I don't think it's the biggest need on this team right now.
Yeah, I'm not for a first round with so many other needs. Like, I think right now you've got Tahir Whitehead, you've got Jared Davis, and you've got Jamal. Am I getting Jamal Agnew's position right? Please don't let me make an ass of myself.
He's a corner.
Fuck. I thought it was one of those hybrids.
last year was kind of a big discussion on this podcast and on the site was, should the Lions go defensive line or should they go linebacker? And those were kind of identified as the two biggest areas, and Bob Quinn decided to go linebacker, which I think was a good choice, and got a couple guys in the first four rounds. But after checking off that box, we kind of knew right away that the next draft would have to really address that line. And so 12 months later, or 8-9 months later, here we are, and I think the plan stays the same.
Yeah, I'm trying to psych my. I've got like some draft rankings here, and I'm looking through them, and I'm not ready for this yet. I'm trying. There's some names on here that I really like, but oh wow! And then I keep scrolling down this article, and I see Sam Darnold at 22. And you know what? I feel like it's time for me to kill this podcast because fuck that. Thank you for listening to the Pride Detroit PODcast. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. Our main theme was produced by Ryan Shepherd. You can find him on Twitter and on SoundCloud at I am Brian Shepherd. IamBrianSHEPARD. Thanks a lot to him. Check out his stuff. He's been great. He gave us Victory Monday, so go check him out. That's I Am Brian Shepherd. And thank you for everyone who keeps listening and makes us one of the greatest Lions podcasts possible. Y'all are awesome. See you, Starside.